Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, and thanks for calling in to Mindful Living with the Adirondack Alps. This is Kathy Homeyer, and I am live at my Lake Clear Lodge and Retreat. And today we're going to be talking to Dr. Cowan. Dr. Cowan, I think I have you on the line. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, we've connected. I'm just going to give a little background. Where I'm coming from is the Northern Adirondacks. My family and I own the Lake Clear Lodge and Retreat. And I'm actually doing double duty here because originally we were going to try and connect on Be Live, and we were able to connect with Dr. Cowan here on the phone line. So I'm actually going to start the Be Live as well, because I have all the pictures of your books, Dr. Cowan, up there.
Okay.
yeah. I have been a Weston Price chapter leader, and if people don't know what that is, that's not really what this show is about, but it's about nourishing foods. And I've been a chapter leader for, I don't know, how many years? 10, 15, not really sure. And every day in my restaurant, I promote the traditional food style. I do cooking demos every night if people request them before dinner. We talk about nourishing traditions. I've had your book, which is called The Fourfold Path to Healing, here in my lodge for a long, long time. And these books are out for everybody to see: Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon, Dr. Cowan's book called The Fourfold Path to Healing, and the other books as well. And why I've connected with Dr. Cowan, this recent one, is because of the vegetable powders that you're doing, and I'll have him tell us about those because I am just new to them. And guess what I got in the mail today? I got one of your powders, Dr. Cowan.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
The threefold?
Threefold.
Or is it fourfold?
No,
yeah.
Threefold. Which one?
Threefold. The
spicy,
threefold,
sweet.
Is there one called savory?
Yes.
It's the green one, yeah. So there's
yeah.
a million things that Dr. Cowan could probably tell us about with the books. I see your newest book on the heart, which I'm really, really interested to take a look at, because a lot of heart issues. I also do some energetic work with different clients as well, so I'm really interested to hear about that. But Dr. Cowan, if you could just tell us about yourself a little bit for those who don't know who you are and what you do, and I'll kind of let you kind of gear the show, because I know you have the new powders are kind of your newest project, if I'm not correct. Except for the book, so busy guy. So I'll let you go ahead and tell us about what you do and what you'd like to tell us about during the show.
Well, I've been a general family doctor for about 35 years. So my training is a medical doctor. I've also been board certified in anthroposophical medicine, which is sort of like
mm-hmm.
biodynamics and Waldorf school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, the first book was Fourfold Path. That was about 18 years ago. Then there was a Nourishing Traditions book for baby and child care. I was a founding board member and still a board member at Weston Price.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wrote I wrote a book called How and Why to Eat More Vegetables when we started the vegetable book powder business. And then I wrote a book on the heart called Human Heart, Cosmic Heart. And in about 2 weeks, I have the next book coming out, which is called Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood
uh-huh.
Disease.
Uh-huh.
So, and I still have a medical practice in San Francisco. So
and what do you do in your spare time?
I mostly grow vegetables, actually.
Yeah. Now, when I saw all your stuff and I saw the vegetable powders, I was looking into it. But what kind of intrigued me, I'm in New York State, and I think the vegetables are, at least in part, are grown in New York State. Is that correct?
So it went through a sort of evolution, and the history of the business was a few over the, you know, I've been, like you, interested in traditional diets for 30 years. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa and taught gardening 40 years ago. So I lived with a traditional African family for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of there that I heard about Weston Price and Steiner and got interested in it. And one of the things that struck me is I ended up, because I'm a sort of a schemer and a classifier, thinking there's basically three food groups. The first is animal food, which includes full-fat dairy and wild fish and grass-fed animals and all that, chickens and all that. And mostly we do pretty well with that these days, at least in the Weston mm-hmm. Price movement. The second group of food I call the seed food, which includes seeds, nuts, grains, beans, things like that. And again, those are pretty widely available, and, you know, they're Weston Price soaking thing and sprouting. And then the third group is fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables. And that's the group that I don't think even the most conscientious eating people have right, because the fact of the matter is traditional people ate about 100 or so different vegetables per year, and most of them were wild and perennial vegetables. And most people today never eat a wild or perennial vegetable in their life. So mm-hmm. being a gardener, I decided to try to grow them and sometimes forage them or whatever, just to try to diversify my diet, because in some ways that's the sort of therapeutic part of the diet. And they're not available even at farmers markets, so I started growing tree collards and genera and ashitaba and all the different perennial vegetables. There's perennial kales, there's, you know, collard greens that grow on trees. And then I was given access to an acre garden in Napa to grow whatever I wanted. And that's a lot more than you can grow for a family of two, obviously. So we started, I got a tip from a restaurant that takes vegetables and makes, basically dehydrates them. And I thought I could do that and allow people to have access to the vegetables that I was growing, especially the unusual ones. So that's how it started, and I thought it was going to be a small, you know, Tom doing it, and then it went from that to getting a kitchen, and then we had more sales than I could grow, and so then we started getting vegetables and other produce from other local farmers, and then we got too big for that, and then we moved some of the operation to New York, and so we're looking to get biodynamically grown vegetables from different biodynamic farms in upstate New York, and I still dry and send some of the things I grow from Napa, and my sons are part of the business. So it's basically a way to, you know, like nobody really eats tree collards or genera. Most people don't even know what those are, but those are very therapeutic vegetables, and so we're growing them or sourcing them, as well as the sort of normal vegetables like leeks and beets and squashes, and we make blends like the blend you were talking about, where we take a root vegetable and a leaf vegetable and a flower fruit vegetable and mix those together. And we make things for culinary purposes and things for more therapeutic purposes. But it's all just diversifying the vegetable food supply.
Awesome. Yeah, we've just been kind of invited to a farmer's market here. But, I mean, we're a restaurant and a lodging. We're pretty busy on Saturdays. But what they don't have at the farmer's market is anybody. They have the foods there, and they have the vegetables grown up here, which in our northern climate is pretty limited, actually. But what
right.
they don't have are people, and this is what I'm trying to develop in my store as well, right on site at my restaurant, is taking these foods from the farmers and everybody, and I'm very lucky to get people delivering right to me as well. But trying to make foods from those foods to sell, kind of like they do at Three Stone Hearth. I've followed her for a long time, love her way that she's able to create all those foods beautiful foods, you know, and has the market right there for it. A little more challenging in my area, but that's what I'm trying to do as well. So I just wanted to tell you a story about, you said people don't generally eat from the wild. We have beautiful wild raspberry bushes all over, and I had a girl come in. She was a teenage girl, and she said, What are those growing on the bushes? And I said, well, they're raspberries. And she asked if she could eat them. Now, I understand the question about maybe, I don't know, maybe there was pesticide, I don't know. But she literally didn't know that she could go ahead and eat wild raspberries. And I said, oh, my gosh, go ahead. There's tons of them out there. Please pick them. They're the best thing you could possibly have. But she had to ask and wonder what the berries were on the bushes and if she could actually, you know, she was on our property, so she was asking as well. But it was a very interesting question that came up with the beautiful wild stuff we have around here. So.
Right. You know, most people have, like I said, never eaten a wild vegetable. And, you know, the interesting thing, if you look into the history of food and particularly plant food and vegetables, is that over the years, breeders, for obvious reasons, have bred vegetables and plants to be sweeter and less nutrient dense than their wild cousins. So the wild vegetables and perennial vegetables tend to have more concentrated nutrients and more protective chemicals, because obviously the plant has to protect itself, and less sugar. And so they don't necessarily taste as sweet, but they have more nutrients. And so essentially what we've done is we've changed or exchanged the nutrients for sugar, which is not a good trade. And the thing about what we're doing is, when you take these vegetables, I mean, I used to joke that if I, you know, after 10 years of working on this for myself, if I tried to develop a practice by saying everybody who came to me had to eat, you know, 15 different vegetables a day and 100 in a year, including 30 wild or perennial ones, I'd be down to maybe 2 patients. And so I had to figure out a way to make that sort of doable for people. And once we figured out the dehydrating part and storing them in mirin jars, which preserve the freshness, now anybody who has, you know, interest can easily do it. And it's no more difficult eating, you know, fresh dehydrated leeks than it is opening a box of Kellogg's cornflakes.
Right. So. Well, I got mine today just before the show here today, and it came in the mail because I had ordered it. And I said, oh, I just hope I, you know, not that you can see it, but I was hoping I could get it just so I had it in my hand while I was talking to you. And I was wondering now, it's not necessarily, you can put them in smoothies probably, but these powders generally are to sprinkle on foods. Is that the way you use the powders, or what's the best way?
It depends on which powder. If you talk about like kale or leeks, you know, then we put it on like eggs in the morning. So you could say, well, everybody has to eat vegetables along with their eggs, and, you know, anybody who knows about leeks, it's kind of a pain if you're in a hurry. So you take a teaspoon of leek powder and you sprinkle that on your eggs, or you can put it on meat or fish, and it increases the flavor dramatically. So you get this wonderful, robust leek flavor, and you've now eaten a whole leek without having to do anything like washing the grit out. Same with kale, same with threefold blends. Some of them are more sweet, like winter squash and beets. And so this morning I had soaked oatmeal, and I put a tablespoon of the winter squash powder on it. So I wasn't just eating oatmeal, I was eating oatmeal with winter squash in it. And then there's ones like pepper salt, and that, you know, that really dramatically improves the flavor of just about any savory dish. I put 3 or 4 in soups every morning. You know, I usually make bone broth soup I cut a few vegetables and saute them, and then I put seaweed powder in, and burdock root powder, and leek powder, and a little bit of squash powder. And it's basically just a way of adding flavor, adding nutrients, adding diversity. And You can put them in smoothies. We have hundreds, I think, by now of recipes, and our customers have written in with how they're using them. So, and in the book that I wrote on how and why to eat more vegetables, we have, you know, Sally Fallon came and made a pumpkin pie out of our pumpkin powder and said it was the best pumpkin pie she ever made. So there's a whole lot of different ways you can use them. This restaurant that I got the idea from, they're kind of, you know, well-known restaurant in San Francisco, and that's how they increase the flavor of their food. So there's a whole lot of different options here.
Awesome. Well, like I said, this is my first one, but I definitely will start using them in my restaurant and at the farmer's market, and having them there as well. Because this area likes their good food, but I'm finding as far as traditional food, I still need to keep getting out there. It used to be in the restaurant when I talked about traditional foods and nutrient-dense foods, especially years ago when I first got your book and the Nourishing Traditions. People would kind of look at me cross-eyed. Now they still find it super fascinating, but they've finally gotten, you know, a lot more people are used to hearing nutrient density or sourdough. I have a sourdough challenge on my my Nourishing 9D website for people, so people can just go there and they get a they get an email every day just to guide them through adding the flour to the water and coming up with a you know, a sourdough and about grains, nuts, and seeds. I still find it absolutely fascinating. I mean, this is really what I really try and do in my restaurant. It's not it's a little seasonal, so I get to play around with cooking classes more, and we used to have a beautiful piano on our stage, and we moved that down, and my husband built this whole counter on the stage. So that's kind of my nourishing foods demo place. So it's really neat to do that.
Well, I can almost guarantee that if you add the powders to your to your restaurant, people will notice it, ask, and you will get more flavorful food than you've ever had before. Because I mean, it basically concentrates the vegetables, and so it concentrates the flavor, and that's really great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when I use essential oils, I cook with essential oils. There's a few that I like in my dishes, and as soon as I bop that in, people are, they don't know what it is, and they're amazed. So I'm really excited to try these. Now, Dr. Cowan, you have a website, correct, for all this?
Yes, it's Dr. Cowan's Garden. That's drcowansgarden.com. And, yeah, that's where we sell the products, and we're thinking about putting them in retail, but right now it's mostly online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I looked through all those, and then I kind of emailed back and forth with one of your assistants and found what you were doing. And of course, the vegetables are always the challenge, I guess. It does, you know, as far as where you get them, or the quality that they are, or just trying, like you said, just trying to cook with them in general. I find people don't even cook a lot. So this, I'm certainly going to, you know, tell folks about it to say just open the jar and put them, something simple that you're cooking.
Right. Even for, you know, so-called picky eating children, there's a lot of uses for them. Like you can make, not that I eat much macaroni and cheese, but if I did, I would put, you know, a tablespoon of or even a teaspoon of kale powder, which would be enough. That's a big serving of kale, and I can tell you your children will not notice it, as far as they'll still eat it, they'll like it, and you can feel like you're actually having gotten them to eat kale without having any fuss about it.
Mm-hmm. In our restaurant here, we do our own, I make my own spätzle, so which is our own homemade noodles. So I am definitely going to try it. Yeah, I'm definitely going to try it with that. We do a lot of things that this is going to be really applicable for. We've got a few minutes left. Do you want to talk more about the powders, or do you want to tell us a little bit about your books?
The only thing is, the other thing I was going to say about the powders is we process them as you would eat them. So I don't really think eating raw kale is a good idea. Some things you do eat raw, but not kale. So we actually, you know, blanch or steam the kale first and then dehydrate it. So we essentially get the vegetable to the point where we would normally eat it, and then we dehydrate it. So it's really preserving. It's really as close to home cooking as possible.
One of my questions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is I have this new book coming out on vaccines and autoimmunity, and I hope people will check this out. And it's going to be available on Amazon on August 14th. And even though this is a bit mercenary, I would really love it if people could buy it on that day, because if we get enough people to buy it on that day, that triggers certain things which then will help get the word out that there's more to this story than most people are aware of. And so I really hope people will consider doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'll definitely share this around. Yeah, vaccines and such are a very important story to tell.
Yes.
Some people are very aware of the background of it, and some people, are not. Everybody's coming from their own directions. But certainly, an important thing. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time to create that book. I'm sure it's going to be awesome on that scale. My kids went to a Waldorf school, and it was interesting. Once I started learning about vaccines, I think my oldest child had most, but she had to have a waiver to get into college. My second child had some. And then my third child, I think, is the one who had the absolute least. When they started, I was behind on the vaccines, and when I took him in and they started sticking his legs full of needles, I went, no, I'm done. That, like, four or five at once, I went, nope, this is not happening again. And then I started getting a little bit more educated about the vaccines in general. So very important story.
Yes.
Yeah.
It may become the civil rights issue of the 2020s. That's my prediction,
yeah.
Anyways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm just watching the clock here because this will end about 7 minutes left, and I would love to pick your brain on anything else that you feel that is important. Can you tell me about your heart book just a little bit, the synopsis of that and the premise behind it?
So the heart book has basically two points. The first one I got from Rudolf Steiner, not himself, because he was dead before I was born. But the second one I didn't make up myself, but it was more of my own initiative. But so the two points are, number one, that the heart is not pumping the blood. That, in other words, the reason the blood moves around the body is not that it's pushed by the heart. And that sounds strange to most people, but I guarantee after they read my book or look at my website, which is called humanheartcosmicheart.com, they will probably see my point. And I would also point out to people who are maybe skeptical about that right now there's two people saying that heart is not the reason the blood moves in the body. There's me and an anesthesiologist named Bronco First. And he wrote a book about this as well, which is much more technical than mine. And his book was endorsed by the head of cardiac anesthesiology at Harvard Medical School, who said, Bronco is right, and the heart can't possibly be moving the blood. So that's the person in the world who knows at least close to the most about how the heart works, and he agrees with our premise. So that was the first point. The second point is, unlike what most people think, I dispute the notion that the only reason people have heart attacks is because they have blocked arteries. Of course, that's the whole reason for doing stents and bypasses and cholesterol-lowering drugs and low-fat diets, is because all those things deal with blockages in the coronary arteries. The fact of the matter is, it's fairly easy to demonstrate that it's only approximately 20% of heart attacks which are caused by blocked arteries, which of course means 80% are not caused by blocked arteries, which is something that the cardiologists are reluctant to even admit, because their entire basically practices are based on dealing with coronary artery lesions. So I make the case that that's not true. There's a lot, which is also the reason why, you know, New York Times just did a front page article with the headline "Stents Proven Useless," which means they don't work, even though it's a $50 billion business in the United States. So basically, I outlined the case that it's not all blocked arteries. 80% is from some other reasons. Here's the other reasons. And here's a approach with diet and a new medicine, which is not a new medicine, but a new to most people, medicine that addresses these other reasons why people have heart attacks. So mm-hmm. that's basically the points of those books, that book.
Yeah, thank you. I think the first time you might have said that at a Weston Price conference, because I've made it to the chapter leaders, and that was in, I want to say Valley Forge, but that's not where it was. And then I didn't make it to the conference, but I think that was your title that year, was that the heart was not a pump. And the only
right.
other place that I've ever heard that besides you was actually in David Wolf's nutrition course. I don't know where he had gotten the information at the time, but I was taking his nutrition course online, and the videos were saying that the heart is not a pump. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, that kind of resonates when you hear it, but you have to have thought in your head first that that's not the way things actually work. So,
you know, it's interesting. I happened to, about a year ago or so, there's, I think, a fairly well-known chef in upstate New York by the name of Dan Barber, right? You know him?
Mm-hmm. I don't. No.
Oh, you don't know? He wrote a best-selling book, and I think he definitely is in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley.
Okay.
And he has his own farm, and he now even has a seed company, which is they Seven Row Seeds, which is devoted towards breeding plants, breeding vegetable plants, for the best taste possible, which I think is very interesting. And they only have seven varieties. One is like a habanero pepper, and another is a cucumber, and another is some sort of winter squash, and a few potatoes. And so I actually have all their different seeds, and I grow them in the Napa garden. And I'm not ready to say they're the best tasting ever, but they're pretty good. Anyways, interesting. So he has a whole farm and educational center and restaurant somewhere in the Hudson Valley. I'm not sure exactly
mm-hmm.
where.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this best-selling book, and I didn't know this, but somebody gave me his book about 6 months ago, and one of the chapters is actually called "The Heart is Not a Pump." And he apparently, well, he does, he quotes extensively from an earlier writing that I had about this, and talking about how that actually impacts how we grow certain foods. Like he was talking about, I think it was clams or something, in this system that's that is very similar to how the circulation actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And that produces the healthiest clams, or I'm not sure if it was clams exactly, but something.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, my point is I'm not the only one who knows this. And that this cardiologist said that the reason we have this antiquated view of the heart, he compared, and mind you, this is the like head of cardiac anesthesiology at Harvard Medical School, so not just some guy who just happened to come along. And he said this is the reason why we can't treat heart failure better now than we could 50 years ago, because we have a faulty understanding of what the heart is actually doing. So
right.
It's a big subject, and
yeah,
I made my contribution
yeah.
there.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we only have a few seconds left. I want to take the time to thank you for taking the time to tell us about this and being in our world with all the information that you provide, as well as growing vegetables. So thank you so much.
Yeah, that's the fun part. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Dr. Cowan. And I will share this to all our group and hope to be in touch at some time soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.